Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in Psalm 3. Have you ever found yourself being blamed for everything? You know that you're innocent, but everyone else thinks you're guilty. It's a powerless feeling when it seems to be you against the world. And in those moments, it helps to know that God sees, that God knows. But what if everybody's saying you're in this predicament because God himself was against you? That's what was happening with King David, who penned this psalm. He has nowhere else to turn but God. So in verse 1, he cries out, "Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? How many?" It felt like everyone. But it wasn't just anyone either. David is older when he's writing this. He's conquered many kingdoms, earning peace for Israel. But then he sees Bathsheba bathing nude on the rooftop, and he must have her. That's another story for another day. But to get her, David commits murder to cover up his adultery. Then David's whole kingdom starts to unravel, starting with the pulling of a thread of David's family, which also starts to fall apart. Then David's son Absalom, watching in the wings, starts the rumor that God isn't really with David anymore. In verse 2, "Many are saying of me, God will not deliver him." Absalom, David's smooth-talking son, acts like a seedy politician, standing at the door of the king's hall, getting the ear of everyone who had come to see David, telling them, "The king's too busy for you these days, but maybe I could sort out your problems. What do you need? Perhaps I can help you." But Absalom wasn't helping them. He wasn't even helping David. He was helping himself. Slowly, he ingratiates himself into the hearts of David's loyal subjects, gaining their loyalty so that he could usurp the throne. Once again, David's on the run, just like he was before being made king when he was a threat to Saul. Now he's a threat to his own son, and that had to hurt, especially with the rumors flying that God was done with David. Done with David because of his sin. First, there was the murder of Uriah, but then taking his wife Bathsheba. But that was many years ago. David had made other mistakes since then, like numbering the people in a forbidden census that almost got the whole city of Jerusalem killed by a plague. No wonder it was so easy for Absalom to start that rumor. God will not deliver him. Those rumors are flying, but David doesn't dwell on the rumors. He looks to the one who can shield him from the sticks and stones and the words that can surely hurt him. Verse 3, "But you, Lord, are a shield around me, my glory, the one who lifts my head high." Did you catch it? Just two powerful little words, and the psalm swings around. Those two words, "but you," like two small door hinges, carrying a massive amount of weight, they swing David back around to face God. "But you, Lord, are a shield around me." You see, this wasn't the first time David has been on the run, needing God to be a shield and the lifter of his head. David's been here before. When on the run from Saul as a young man, David kept his faith and trusted that God would deliver him. And God did. But now as an old man, David knows God can do this. But note that David says, "You are my glory." David has nothing he can glory in. He's busted up his life. There's plenty to throw stones at in most of our lives. But let he who glory, glory that he knows me, says God in the Bible. And here, David does. Verse 4, "I called to the Lord, and he answers me from his holy mountain." David, by the way, is far from God's holy mountain, Mount Zion, the mount that Jerusalem is built on. David is back out in the wilderness again, roughing it in caves, sleeping under stars, and just as he lays his head down to sleep, just like before, David calls out to the Lord in the night. And God doesn't just hear. "He answers me," says David. And whatever God says to David, it's personal to him. It soothes him as the weariness and exhaustion of his situation take him. And David finally gets some rest in verse 5. I lie down and sleep. I wake again because the Lord sustains me. In the morning, David opens his eyes, but doesn't take for granted that he's still alive. I wake again because the Lord sustains me. David would normally be too afraid to fall asleep in case his hiding place was found. But David says, the Lord sustains or keeps me. God's presence is like the hand of a mother upon the forehead when her child is sick, soothing. David is not abandoned. He's sleeping under the watchful eye of his father. My friend, every morning we awaken, we can have the confidence that God has kept us here for at least one more morning. And I'm not guaranteed tomorrow, and neither are you, but at least today was in God's plan for our life. Going into our day with that knowledge should give us a booster shot to say, if God is for me, who can be against me? That's the effect God's presence has on David as his faith surges with renewed confidence in verse 6. I will not fear, though tens of thousands assail me on every side. If the world is against David, it doesn't matter if David is against the world. What matters is if God is against David. And he's not. God is for David. So let's do the math. You and I against the world equals 1 against 8 billion. But you plus God equals no contest against that 8 billion. You against the world equals certain defeat. But you plus God equals an undefeatable army. David knows these incredible odds and calls upon his army of one in verse 7. Arise, Lord, deliver me, my God. Strike all my enemies on the jaw. Break the teeth of the wicked. David's not messing around here. Strike my enemies on the jaw. Break their teeth. Knock them out, God. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Wait a second here. David, did you just pray for God to punch people and break their teeth? Understandably, David's a little hurt here. And that's what I love about the Psalms. David here is being real with his feelings. He goes to God as he is, not waiting to be perfect. But notice where David tells God to strike them. Ah, on the mouth. Remember the gossip? The rumor mill? Their wagging tongues? David's being metaphorical here and asking God to silence their rumors. Arise, David says. God has heard David, but more than hearing him, he's answered him. But now he asks God not just to hear, not just to answer, but to act. And David closes in verse 8, from the Lord comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people. From the Lord comes deliverance, not from people, from the Lord. Nowhere else. And of course, at this point, God was all David had. And at the end of the day, anything and everything can be taken from us at any moment. Our job, our health, our loved ones, even our very lives. The only one in control of your circumstances and mine is God. But I love that David brings it back to God's people. God's people had let him down. They doubted him. This psalm wasn't about David's love of being king, because being king was difficult, and David probably wanted to chuck his crown in the river sometimes. But he was there to be a blessing to God's people. And if that meant he had to take a few hits on the chin, David was always willing, because David wasn't alone. 1,000 years later, Jesus, our king, would hang on a cross, and God's people would shout at him, let's see if God delivers him. Jesus, very similar to how they said God would not deliver David. Unlike David, Jesus would be innocent and everyone would think him abandoned and turn away from him. So if this is where you're at today, you against the world, just remember, sometimes that just means you're in good company.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.